Welcome everybody to the Polarize podcast. This is a podcast about polarizing movies, and polarizing in the sense of Rotten Tomato scores. Sometimes critics love it and audiences hate it, or vice versa. Those are the movies that we cover on this show slash pod. Today we are going to be talking about the 2013 movie called The Double, starring Jesse Eisenberg, directed by Richard Ayoade. I've found that is how you pronounce it. The scores for this are, critics gave it a certified fresh 83%, and audiences gave it a stinky 59%. So we're going to get into it today and talk about this movie, talk about why it's polarizing, and then just, yeah, go soup to nuts this thing. It is not only going to be me talking about it, but at this point, I would also like to intro the forever guest, is what we like to call him, but my co-host, Mr. James Lindsay. Hey.
Hello, I'm back. I am here for another episode where, you know what another name for this show, or maybe a different show, would be?
Whoa, okay.
Soup to Nuts.
Yeah.
And we go soup to nuts, baby. On everything. Or maybe it's literal. Maybe we talk about soup and nuts.
I like that idea. If we're going to call it soup to nuts, I love the idea of just, it's broken up. First half is soup talk and the second half is nut talk.
Those are both kind of like apps in their own way. Maybe a bar snack. Maybe nuts are more bar snack.
We don't have to put them in a box.
I mean, soup in a box doesn't sound like the ideal way to hold it, but you can put nuts in a box, maybe.
You definitely could put nuts in a box, that's for sure. You can also put a dick in a box as well. Yeah. Hello. You
can put me in a nutshell.
You know what? Before we get into movies,
how did I get in this nutshell?
This is me in a nutshell. You know what? Let's actually talk about soup and nuts.
Okay.
James, what's your favorite soup?
And then what's your favorite nut? Shit. If I had a favorite soup, man, it is tough to pick favorites. I love a good minestrone. Minestrone.
Ooh.
I love a good albondigas. I really love albondigas. Mexican meatball soup. Ramen.
Okay.
Pho. Yeah. Shit. What would be my favorite, though? It's tough.
Out of those four, what would you say?
Maybe ramen. I love ramen.
Hey, not.
That might be the most I'm having soup. And it's a meal, having ramen. Ooh, udon's really good too. But yeah, I'll go with ramen. That'll be my fave for today. Maybe it'll change tomorrow. I'll let you know.
You know what? I won't hold you to that. Feel free. You know, wherever the wind takes you, wherever the soup weather takes you.
This is a great first episode of Soup to Nuts, by the way. So for you, we're starting in the soup section. What's your fave soup? I know you're not the biggest clam chowder.
I am not, unless it is of the Manhattan variety.
You're the Manhattan kind, yes. As I've Sean also Connery been called, says, clam chowder. Aphrodisiac.
Which, funny enough, I go by many names, you know, people just tuning in. I go by, a whole host of names, you know, Bardini Rizzler, the great Brandini.
Oh, yes.
Brandanowitz. Mr. Biggs. All of this.
Info fanny pack. I mean, blood fart.
Hello.
Sorry, cover your ears, children.
But recently made a new friend and they call me Brandon Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. Didn't we try to come up with that one on the pod one time? I feel like that was like we were trying to mess with that one. That's great because we already got the Brandini, so. It's Brandon Manhattan. Who came up with that? Because I feel like I was there for that.
Oh, maybe you were. It's my buddy Cedric. Met him through Chip.
Shit, I thought. Maybe that's a great name, though. It's an excellent name.
Oh, of course you met him because of my birthday. He was in Havasu with us. Him and his wife. He was the guy legendary. With the braces.
Yes, legendary birthday.
Oh, legendary. But yeah.
We learned Brandon a card Manhattan. Game Dallas, I think it was. That was a fun card game.
Yeah, not Corpus Christi, as some people were trying to make it.
Oh, is that another name for it?
It's not, but it's just another city. In
oh, duh, okay. Duh. I don't. I'm a little slow. I just think of like, because we also revived a game that goes by different names is Egyptian Rat War or Egyptian Rat Screw or however you might say it. But we played that at your B-Day celebration as well. And that was a blast.
Oh, just outside weather was just warm nights. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next to the pool. Just
amazing. Warm nights. Cool pool.
Yeah.
Fun games.
That's the name of my autobiography.
Good buds. Man, Jimmy Buffett's alive and well in Brandini. Brandon Manhattan the Rizzler.
And Brandon Manhattan the Rizzler. Hello, let's go.
We gotta find a way to actually get our I mean, you especially, because you already have, I don't have a drink name. That would be sweet. I mean, but we just gotta, you gotta find a place that's like your regular place and just convince them to like, give me an item on the menu. Come up with the Brandini, put it on the menu just for a special, do a special one day. Cause that'd be like, you've made it at that point. If you have a drink named after you,
you've absolutely made it. And I have a drink already in the can ready to go, you know, Breezy Brandini.
It's got a great name.
It's got a great name and it's a great drink. Mm-hmm. Great on a summer's day.
A variation on a trending drink already.
I know. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm gonna campaign at my local bar to get the Breezy Brandini on the menu.
What a move. You just start posting propaganda.
Just slowly just start to
make Breezy Brandini a thing. Hell yeah.
I love that. So that's me and Manhattan clam chowder, but my favorite soup is French onion.
Ah. Oh, so good.
It's
so fucking good.
It's such a good soup. It's so incredibly flavorful. It's really easy to make. It just makes me think of so many situations in my life that I've gotten it, because there's restaurants typically have it on the menu by and large. I mean, obviously not all restaurants, but a lot of restaurants have it on the menu. So if you're doing a meal and you're like, I'm going to do a soup course or a salad course, then the main entree. I mean, if they got French onion on the soup, then or on the soup, on the menu, then I'm doing that.
Yeah. And there's already, I don't know. I love a good dipping the bread in, and it's kind of already involved, right? And the bread's already in there and a part of it, and the cheese. It's just like, it's nothing like any other soup. The closest thing I can think is almost like, and it's not even close, but the cheesy part of it, of like dipping a grilled cheese into a tomato soup or something. You get that cheesiness with the soup. That's just, it's so nice. It holds up to the temp of the soup, and oof, it's such a nice flavor with a good sourdough or something. Oh yeah. On to nuts.
Okay.
Oh no, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say I just had a conversation with Danny, who's been on this pod before, about he was making a grilled cheese, and he made this statement, and I 100% agree, is sourdough is the best grilled cheese bread.
Agreed. Yeah,
it's just nothing else compares.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of sourdough also for breakfast sammies. I know, like bagels, it's hard to beat a bagel for a good breakfast sandwich, especially like an everything bagel might be the best, but damn, do I love a good sourdough or like a rosemary sourdough. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Good for so many occasions, but I completely agree. And that sourness is great with the cheese. Brings it out.
Cheese has kind of got some sourness to it. You know, it's like, acidity. Yeah, it's yeah. Match made in heaven.
We had when Brandon and I, Brandon Manhattan and I lived together, we had a neighbor that won competitions for grilled cheese.
He did.
And he would tell me stories about it. And part of it was like using a little bit of the, you know, Kraft American, I believe was.
Oh,
something.
Yeah.
It's like, because people go too crazy on all the fancy cheeses. It's like, you can have fun with some of that, incorporate some of that. But you got to have that's what a grilled cheese is about, is that, you know.
Singles. Like Kraft singles, like a processed American cheese, because it is so incredibly meltable. And I mean, it's just, yeah, it, when you're thinking grilled cheese, you're thinking the cheese pull, you're thinking something ooey gooey, and American cheese, it just, you know, it can do that. It gets you there. But you're right too, because he did.
And for breakfast sandwich too, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I remember him talking about how, yeah, and because of it being a competition, so many people would, you know, plus it up in all these ways and add all these different types of cheeses. But yeah, what ends up winning is just having something that gives you that, like, but this tastes like something that I grew up with.
Exactly. Some
familiarity to it. And it's not too up its own butt about needing to have all these, you know, exotic cheeses combined and, you know, melding together. So yeah. Oh.
Wonder love what that community is like, the soup competition community.
You mean the grilled cheese competition?
Or grilled cheese, sorry, we were in soup territory, I combined it. That too.
Yeah. That too, yeah. Yeah. Totally. God, yeah.
I went to a mushroom festival. It was pretty small, but it was at it was near me. And that was pretty interesting. They had the center was just filled with a bunch of different types of mushrooms. They had them all labeled, and it was so cool just like kind of walk around and look at them. And I got this this mushroom miso glaze or whatever I brought back. It was so good. That community was really cool. They were all really nice.
Oh, for sure. Obviously. I bet. Obviously. Yeah. Oh my God. Cause yeah, the mushroom community, I'm sure, is a bunch of outdoorsy, you know, type of individuals, you know, people that love to go on hikes. Yeah. I don't know. People that, I don't know. Just a little bit of a hippiness to it. Yep. I think. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, so do you recall what a lion's mane mushroom looked like?
I'm trying to think if I really honed in and got a good look at that. I think I was just kind of like looking at the ones that look cool and kind of moving on, because they had this whole, this whole thing in the middle that just kind of had them displayed some really cool ones. But I'm familiar with that one being a very popular,
mushroom. Medicinal
for other.
Very cool looking. Such a cool looking mushroom. Mushrooms in general can be so cool looking.
Chanterelle. I went chanterelle harvesting one time, and those look really cool. That was a lot of fun.
I'm a mushroom fan. I didn't always used to be. Growing up, I was like, ooh, no thanks, no mushrooms, no olives too. I was like, ooh, please no, this is gross. But in college, you know, when I was living at that Nutwood apartment, there was a lot of things that we did where we're like, we're gonna change our minds about stuff, you know, and really take this opportunity of being in college to, you know, develop new interests and I don't know, open ourselves up to liking new things, because that's what college is all about. And yeah, I remember just ordering mushrooms and olives on stuff on a semi-regular basis until it just clicked. And I was like, oh, right. Vinegar with olives, love the taste of vinegar. Now I love olives so much. And mushrooms being that umami, that like meatiness, you know, is cool and is such a great flavor. I just cooked with them this week. I made a butter masala.
Ooh.
And had mushrooms in it. And I love me some mushrooms. But
it's almost like that introduction to those kind of things are tough when you're a child. If maybe you have like a bad version, that can ruin your impression of it for a while, that to where you're scared to try it again. And then you try one with like a bunch of butter and garlic and stuff, you're like, okay. Some herbs, you know, and some good seasoning and are incorporated into something. And then you start there and you start to work backwards and to the point where you're having them maybe on a salad a little bit more by themselves or whatever it may be, because they can utilize them in a lot of delicious ways. People, mushrooms, soups, nuts, peanut. If I don't know if peanut counts because it's a legume, but I think we're both big peanut guys.
Super huge peanut guy.
Because by a long run, it's peanuts for me.
Oh, same here, man. I feel like I'm having a peanut once a month at least. I mean,
peanut a month.
Just one. Your allowance. Yeah. And that's my allowance. I like to keep myself in check, you know, just only one. And man, when that one peanut, it's peanut pops day. Off, ooh, it's peanut. You know, I got to put on this shirt that just has a peanut on it. And I just kind of, you know,
monocle on the top hat, like Mr. Peanut.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I really get into it because it's such a special time of the month for me to just, you know, have that one peanut. When it comes to peanuts, James, what's your preferred peanut? You know, or how do you take it, or what's your preferred?
It's been a while since I've, but I mean, just a salted. I mean, I don't know if there's a brand, but yeah, just a salted peanut. You're at a
shelled or no shell.
Oh, give me that shell, sure. Especially where I'm at a place where I can, right? Or I can drop it in a reasonable, not messy way. Like, especially if there's a restaurant. Yeah, like, what is the steakhouse where you can do that? Or there's other restaurant like Texas. Does Texas Roadhouse? There's other like steakhouses.
It was Roadhouse, yeah.
Roadhouse, maybe like Five Guys. Does like some
Five Guys does it too. Yeah, yeah.
Been a minute since I've been to either of those places, but love when that's the case. Or at a baseball game, like best snack at a baseball game because it keeps you busy too. You're doing something, and I mean pistachios are fucking great for that reason as well. Love a good pistachio. Mm.
Oh, I mean that's, yeah. I would say that's number two for me.
Might be, yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's so expensive. So yeah, it's one of those things where doesn't come by too often. But man, when it does, it rips.
Mm-hmm. Macadamias, like maybe not just a straight macadamia, but I love how it's incorporated into things. Like I've had macadamia milk. It's so good in coffee.
Whoa!
Yeah, okay. they make nut milk of everything. You find that.
Oh yeah,
find that macadamia milk. People put that in your coffee. Ooh, so good.
Ooh, it's so get good. Out of town. With
maybe
that.
A little coconut and macadamia. I don't know. I don't know.
What?
Get a little crazy. Does coconut, is that a nut?
I mean, no, but
we're in the weeds here, people. All right. Yeah. Well, that's our episode. We'll see you next time. No, we should probably get into what we might be avoiding a little bit.
Yeah, I'm getting a sense that both of us are kind of, buying our time until we delve into this movie, which
the doble. Yeah.
The Duble.
The Dopio.
El Double Reno.
Double Reno. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a Brandon. Mm-hmm. There's the Brandini. Brandini came into our lives and you know, it's just a different side of Brandon I haven't seen. And I don't know, there's something going on. But I don't know who we have with us today. Is it Bardun? Is it Brandon Manhattan? Is it Brandini? We'll see.
We'll see. So that makes me think of this concept in the movie that I would like to ask as a question to you is, if you were to have a double like in this movie, would you be the gregarious one, the outgoing one, or would you be the introverted?
I relate with the introverted one. I know it's like way more like over the top, I think, how this movie portrays it, so much so, like, and I get that's just a part of the story, I think, is having the two mm-hmm. sides of the coin.
High contrast.
Yeah, and this one goes very far with it in a lot of ways, but I definitely relate a lot more with the guy who's apologizing constantly. And I don't, yeah, some of the other stuff is a little extreme as far as being like not being memorable or anything like that, but I think more so just with like the introverted and maybe like just kind of like not trying to ruffle any feathers and keeping your head down a little bit more. But because the gregarious one, there's a lot of other attributes of him too that, yeah, it's tough. Obviously, it's like very clearly he's like the more like outgoing one, or like that side of him is more outgoing and gregarious and confident, but also he's like dumber and doesn't want to do the work and doesn't follow through on the actual substance. Like doesn't have any substance. So that's like an interesting side of it as well. At least in how this movie portrays it, but which one did you relate with more?
I related with the introverted one as well, because mm-hmm. yeah, the idea that you're, so at odds with the version of yourself that you would think you would want to be. And having that kind of like
Tyler Durden.
Tyler Durden, for example, but I won't, that's a great movie to bring up in relation to this, but then it just makes me think about how successful that movie is about, you know, handling this concept than this movie is, because with Fight Club, just simply put, we don't have to get into the weeds there, but like, he is envious and spends time almost becoming that person, you know, because that is in a figment in his mind of what he would like to be.
It's almost like the complete opposite in every way, including the negative ways as well. You're just going so far against what you are or something that you, and you've actualized this version, but where that's drawn from, I guess, is different in all these different kind of stories. There's that TV show. I like that TV show.
Anytime that came on,
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Is that, what's his face from House of Dragon 2?
It is. Yeah.
The
main father guy.
Rhys Ifans or whatever, like Viserys. You can see maybe, because that's where I'm looking for in this movie, is that, yeah, that kind of like, where is he drawing that idealized version of himself from? I guess you don't have to go so far with that. I'm kind of curious about the attributes of this other guy and why he wants so much and desires to be, you know, that version. Because, and I'm just going to bring it up right now, because I thought the homophobic thing was weird.
Yeah.
And that was just like, that's just one layer, but and everything. And that just was outside of all the stereotypical things of him being like cocksure and very like, you know, just, I want my fucking eggs and all this shit. But then all of a sudden he's just like, so against, you can't be gay. Like you can't, if you do that, then you like guys and all this, and being very like, and I guess that's maybe part of like, he's just so hetero.
He's just so fucking hetero.
And the idealized version of him is really like a guy that can get women, essentially.
Yeah. Which
in bed.
Totally. And this movie proposes a lot of things, but I think as we talk through this, it's really the like execution that's the problem, you know, because there obviously is an interesting idea here because of like movies that you've already mentioned with our movie like Fight Club, but we can mention other ones. I know you wanted to talk about Enemy, and I haven't seen it, but I would like to hear from you about like comparisons of what worked there and what didn't work, you know, things like that. But ultimately it's just, This movie needs more meat. It needs more growth in characters, growth in relationships. But this, fundamentally, this whole movie is a fever dream. It's like in a different time and place. And it leans on that, I would argue, too much to its detriment, is that it's trying to be so... like ethereal or dreamlike, that's what it kind of leans on as an excuse to not get into more get into more of relationships or things like that, because it tends to keep things way too surface level when it needs more development and substance below this, you know, the plot.
The ball starts rolling much too late. So you know that it's like possible for them to get at least some like action going or like some movement, but it's not super coherent when it finally like needs to happen in the act three or whatever. But I don't know if this contributes, but there's only like 5 sets in this movie as well.
Oh, yeah.
And they are fucking like aggressive sets. Like, maybe not the outward, the apartment building. Okay. You see like every angle of that fucking apartment building. And the place he works. Oh my God. But the sets are just like in the subway, of course, the subway. And they use him so repetitively and maybe to an effect of his life being, you know, this in this dystopic sort of
there, yeah,
going, absolutely, you know, doing the same thing every day.
Very and, routine.
Yeah. And then, and I get what they're trying to do. It does, the sets is one thing, and I'll leave that aside. That was just kind of bothering me that it was, and it doesn't have to be. There are movies that have low budget and they have not that many sets, but maybe they're able to work it in. Mm-hmm. But the way that this movie does with editing, like the editing is rough.
Editing's rough.
The lighting is like, why are we on a stage play right now? The sets and the lighting.
Such harsh lighting.
Is a fucking coming, stage play. And I don't know if. Yeah, it's all spotlights. It's all spotlights. Mm-hmm. So like, it's either fully dark or fully lit. And so you see characters like walk into their light constantly. And you see a scene starting where a person's walking in complete darkness and then they walk to the foreground of the screen and then full light on their face from like a light from above or whatever. And that's a stylistic choice. They're very intentional about that. Sometimes it looks okay, but most of the time it looks harsh, oversaturated, over contrast, like just not pleasant for me to look at. And but occasionally it looks good, and occasionally there's some fun editing things because they're taking some bigger swings. But most of the time, it's grating and doesn't work for me, and is trying really hard to be stylistic and artistic. So I'm trying to not get too hard on it in some senses, but it does not make a good story, does not make an overall enjoyable experience, unfortunately. So yeah, leaving that there, I don't know if you have anything to say about that before we move on to like maybe performances and stuff like that. But
yeah, absolutely. Cause like what you're talking about speaks to, I'm sure, what I'll mention in other ways, when talking about this movie, is there is a concept and an idea that obviously Richard is interested in presenting. And one of those ideas is, since this is based off of a Dostoevsky novella, wanting visual representation of a very harsh reality and a very oppressive life that is, and just, yeah, and I'll just leave it there, like, and communicate that visually. You know, why the sets are what they are is because it allows you, it's so hermetic in a way that it's, yeah, this individual, Simon/James, is just doing the same thing over and over again.
Same diner every time, yeah.
Same diner every time that he gets treated like shit at, and he gets treated like shit at work. And so the idea, I get why to visually do that, but then to your point is, it's not done with, like, I don't know, a level of competency or a level of flair, and I don't know, so, like, it's just not quite getting to, you know, getting to a place that it's maybe just at a base level interesting. Because I feel like if you were to talk about movies like, I don't know, like Eraserhead in relation to this movie,
that's a great pull. I mean, but it's very obvious. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But that's like a movie that's also very like lit in a way, a lot of harshness to it. It's a lot of claustrophobic kind of setty feel to it.
So I'm curious of this, like in a black and white cut, I'm curious what that would look like.
It would probably look better, I would say. Cause yeah, then weirdly, that's like, it's the cake and eat it too. It's like, if you're going to want a visual representation of a oppressive society, a society devoid of joy, or a life devoid of joy, yeah, then to also saturate and have have certain things.
It's these yellow lights, man. I don't know. And that's, it's interesting because, I mean, the first mention of Enemy is, there's a lot of yellow in that movie too, but it's a haze and it's like a filter that they put on it almost. That almost is like early, like you're going to Mexico or something in like an early 2000s movie or something like that, or in Traffic and Soderbergh's Traffic or something. But in this one, yeah, it's just that there's no natural daylight in like the movie, it feels like. And there's occasionally some parts where he's with her, like on their date. I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, things like evened out. And there's like a softer tone over the scene. And like, oh, this is possible. And to know that it was possible and that could have been a little bit more purposeful in between the moments, like, I don't know. It almost comes across as like overcompensating a little bit. I don't know if that, maybe that's being a little harsh, but it comes across as like trying to make up for knowing that there's a lot of repetitious content in a lot of the same sets that they do have to get interesting with how to shoot it. I agree, but it's difficult to make a frenetic, fast-paced movie in such a small environment. Like taking more purposeful edits and longer takes between them in such a confined, like you're saying, like hermetically sealed environment, like makes being in those places more bearable. Because I find myself like liking those movies. Like, I don't know, obviously Hateful Eight is coming from someone who's obviously an amazing filmmaker, but I can watch a movie stuck in one location and be all right. But yeah, that, and you mentioned Eraserhead. I think that pull is a great comparison, because you can tell he's just trying so much to use those sort of audio editing techniques, which the audio editing at moments is really cool. Very obviously like pulled from that sort of, you know, Lynchian sort of way of like filmmaking, but also it's like, it's a sort of, that's why I say overcompensating maybe, because it's the attempt to be surreal when it's so heavy handed that it doesn't, everything else is so heavy handed too. And when you put those surreal elements in, it doesn't work as well. And another mention of Enemy, where that movie uses surrealist elements very well, I think. And I do like that one, but trying my best not to mention it, but it coming up, I do have to say, like, that movie came out the same year. That's a pretty bonkers thing to happen. I wish I had more of an answer on the show for in research as to why, you know, two things come out at the same time based on the same exact story. You know, there's Dostoevsky, but then there's like the other Jose Saramago, I believe is the author's name of the other version of that's inspired by Dostoevsky as well. So a copy of a copy, and it's a double of a double. So I guess it works to be inspired by different things. Like, this is an interesting idea, doppelganger, and David Lynch has plenty of doppelganger shit in his movies, or in his sort of shows and movies as well. So you can tell he's to wrap up any sort of point I'm trying to make, you can tell he's like coming through with a lot of like influences to his filmmaking, and it becomes frustrating as an audience member to see those, but then I have it not be like satisfyingly notched in and fit in and to the puzzle that is a movie that works in like an evenly paced way, because this movie is very unevenly paced as well, and I feel like I've been railing on it for a while now. So is there anything you wanted to mention that I just said?
Yeah,
I was going to mention like Eisenberg's performance at some point.
I wanted to transition based off of what we're talking about, the unevenness in relation to the dark subject matter, but also having a lot of comedy in this, that this movie weirdly made me, after watching it, I was like, there was a lot of quote unquote funny stuff in this, but I just, you know, as I ruminated with, you know, what I just saw, I don't know. I came to the conclusion, the reason I wasn't laughing or with it comedically is because the subject matter is so fucking heavy. Mm-hmm. You know, at a base level, I just thought about like the overall interactions, relationship between Jesse Eisenberg, the doubles. None of it is has moments that kind of allow you to laugh and to have fun with it, because their interactions from the jump are so serious. You know, it's even like, you know, going to the diner together, there's this weird tension that immediately happens where you're on edge, where obviously he's uncomfortable, but then the double yells essentially at the waitress. And yeah, after watching interviews with Richard, like, he is a very funny guy and he finds dark things very comedic, you know, just solely like in an interview, he was talking about the idea of the double itself. In particular, the idea that, you know, like the scene when you first meet the double in this movie, where people don't recognize that he's an exact copy of it, and finding so much humor in that. And so that's an example of that's supposed to be played in the director's mind as being funny, but it's not, because the lead up and the way that Jesse's playing it, it's
Noah so Taylor plays it pretty well, but beyond that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
And time again, it's like a lot of the comedy in this movie isn't like what it's directed at is Jesse Eisenberg's character getting shit on, you know, losing over and over again. And it's supposed to be really funny how a lot of it's like bureaucracy stuff. It you know, at times this movie reminded me a little bit of Super Troopers in its like satire approach, where it has this colonel figure that exists and everybody's just making reports. Do you know what these reports are? No. And then the way that people talk about it, it's like, he's so good at doing reports. And there's not, you don't get any sense of like what that company actually makes.
I do like how vague that is. Yeah.
Is comedy. Like that's satire. That's comedy. But like,
it's just passed by. It's so like, it's so just like shuffled by. It's never, you don't get to absorb it as much as you want to.
Well, because I think I just always came back to the fact is that it's because Jesse Eisenberg's character is getting tormented. And to Jesse's credit is he's a good actor. So you really feel a sense of this, like, you know, loneliness, this disconnected, despondent, this down and out, this guy that really is going through a hard time. And it's really tough to let the comedy, to laugh at the comedy, because just a minute ago we had people committing suicide. We had, you know, and even that suicide scene has like this weird, like the, not cops, but they're like, that's their whole thing is to like clean up suicide bodies. And that's supposed to be played for comedy, but what the subject matter is you're like, I'm not laughing at this. This is horrendous. You're telling me that, you know, it's almost like a part of the joke in the dialogue is suicide business is booming and that should be funny. That's not
funny. And that whole thing about the net and the foreshadowing there.
Right. Where they just explain like, man, if he only fell a couple of feet to the left or whatever.
And there's no other net. There's just like this one tiny little net.
Then he would have still been. How do they say that? It's like he still would have been maimed, but he would be alive.
So like, that was like very like clear, like what's going to happen to him later, I guess. But yeah, and this is where I don't know. This is maybe not the answer for everything, but is like very British.
It is
dry, and like a lot of the dark humor that doesn't explain everything, obviously, but a lot of that plays like snappy. Everything is just so snappy, and whether it's a joke you can't absorb or it's just even a line, it's not in every scene, but there's a lot of scenes where it's like, I say my line, now you say your line, now, and then it just is like quipped back and forth, and sometimes the conversation is like, are these people even in the same room, which is part of the surrealist attitude towards filmmaking, which I get what they're going for, why it feels almost like a fever dream, because these people are like saying things that don't even address what the last person just said. And especially between him and Mia Wasikowski or whatever, however you say your name. Mm-hmm. But I agree with the writing. They set up certain situations that end up being funny because some of the actors pull it off. But even then, it's like, I like the guy that is telling him that, like, you're not in the system and you can't get back in the system, and like, that's it. And you said he was on the IT crowd as well. He does this thing at the very end where he takes his computer and he smiles and he like,
yeah,
like that has nothing. I feel like maybe he pulled that on one of the takes and Richard was like, yeah, do that. Cause that seems like very much just him doing something fun. And it's like, hell, like, good. We need more of that kind of life. And even if it's weird, sort of put on, you know, sort of fake nice for the whatever you call him, the sergeant, corporal, whatever.
The colonel.
But then you even get the other guy from IT crowd later as the nurse, and his whole scene wasn't that funny either. I don't know. That didn't really come across super strong, but I think I laughed like three times. And one of them was the guy taking the computer away. The other one was when he comes out, and there was such a weird scene going into this, but like, he's visiting his mom, and then like the other lady with like the pigtails is like pulls a knife out, and I forget exactly why she,
I know what you mean.
Because she, yeah, says she needs to perform some ritual or something, and he gets freaked out because he's like, and this looks like a ceremonial knife, and then he goes to the front desk guy and he's like, are you aware that people have weapons here? I should pull out. Do you know people are carrying weapons? Yeah. How long has this been going on? A while. And he opens his jacket and he has a gun.
Just flies in.
That was great. That
guy, right. Because that guy is a comedian.
Deadpan, funny, like everything. Yeah. There's a lot of deadpan stuff. And that was one that did work for me, but I didn't expect it.
And that's a great example too, because it just makes me think of why it's not that funny is because of how Jesse's also playing it too.
Well, that's, you know, yeah, like, I've been meaning to get into the performance there. And okay. I mean, if we want to move on from writing and all that, because I do put a lot on the writing, and there's performances that do break through. But overall, it is dour, and it is putting everyone in a situation where there's not a lot of time to relish in any sort of humor or levity. And it is all very down on the main character, which I think Jesse Eisenberg does play well. I think he does play like the main character well. I just don't think he plays the other part very well. I don't think there's enough of, and I almost don't even blame him either. I feel like it's casting him, but he does the physicality okay, and the facial expressions, but his voice is so fucking monotone that when they are in a conversation together, like, I'm done. And this movie is a movie called The Double, where there's two of them. There really shouldn't be many scenes with them together, in my opinion. And that's what Enemy does really well, is refrain from, there's like a big buildup to them finally being in the same room together. And then and then they kind of back off from that. Them being in like going back and forth on each other is already tough for me to get into a movie like that. But it's like, back and forth, and them sitting at the diner, it's like, yeah, he is emoting with his body and his face,
very much so,
and he's pretty good with that, but he is deadpan and monotone. And even he's like, well, give me some fucking eggs. Well, it doesn't change. Not saying it should or whatever, but I think it would help a lot to add a little bit something different with the voice.
To me,
I don't know. Maybe it's just a different actor. Maybe it's my own thing with Jesse Eisenberg.
No, it's definitely a different actor would be better, because, you know, to Jesse Eisenberg's credit, is his whole career has been picking interesting movies and using his cachet to get projects going. And I do like the fact that he hasn't done a lot of like Lex Luthor, Superman, or Now You See Me movies. And he does a lot of movies. And a lot, you know, and a majority of them are, in indie-ish movies. That just, I'm sure, benefit getting made from him being attached to it. And it really seems like he is an active participant in the roles that he picks. So he really brings it, but it is miscasting for him here, because at a fundamental level, I think the James version of Simon needs to just be likable. And he is not likable because of Jesse Eisenberg.
That's a great point.
Like,
Neither of them really are, unfortunately. You feel for the main character, of course, but you're also kind of like, you get introduced with him looking through a telescope to his, he's a peeper right off the bat,
Exactly.
Like, and you're already just like, this guy.
Sure. And I can give a little bit of, again, this is an individual that is so inept at, having real human relations. Mm-hmm. So him being interested in seeing other people's lives through with space in between makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Rear window style. Yeah,
absolutely. But again, the problem is that they're just not likable enough, where it made me think of the fact that, George McFly, when you meet him in
Back to the Future,
is a peeper, you know. But it's crazy how, and weird, I will say, how easy you're able to move past that in that movie, because he just has such a, like,
it also makes sense. The way I like to look at that too, and it is like a weird thing, but it makes sense why Marty wouldn't have heard that story. And I like that idea of, like, there's this, like, kind of like seedy underbelly of, like, the story of your parents getting together. Maybe you don't fully know. And then you find it out this way. What the movie is going for, of like, of digging up those things you didn't know about your parents' history of their relationship and themselves. And it doesn't have to be a perfect, you know, celibate, whatever sort of character, like, that's Chas and all that shit. And it doesn't, and especially in a gritty movie, but I gotta give me something. Even when Wallace Shawn doesn't get a moment to be like,
I don't know. Yeah. Like, his usage in this movie is so underutilized. I spent like 30 minutes trying to figure out why Wallace Shawn did this in the first place.
Does the same thing every scene. He doesn't do anything. He just constantly says the same fucking thing every scene.
Right. He just berates him about not being a good worker. It's just over and over again. It's like, you need to be better. You're not a good worker. Let me call, you know, always calling him the wrong name and stuff like that. And it's not funny. And it's just overall unenjoyable to just see such a well-known actor be subjugated to this, where, yeah, you're just a smarmy asshole that has such a little to do and such little effect on almost everything.
Yeah. I think Mia is doing what she can in the movie, but also that is an opportunity for there to be more life as well. But this is the movie that Ayoade wanted to make, and the tone that he wanted to set. But I'm not really rooting for the main character. I'm like rooting for things to just like leave people to leave him alone a little bit. The thing about people not recognizing him and the guy that, like, and every single time he goes in, they don't know who he is. That's supposed to be really funny too. They do that every single time. Is like the new day will start and it'll start with that. Is how you know it's like a new day, I guess. That's a signifier. But that got old really quick and was never really that funny in the character that had to stop him at every point, even at like the party. But yeah, I mean, barreling through this movie, like, just to bring up like the end, I couldn't even like really piece it all together. And there were moments where I'd pause and go back a little bit and try to keep track of everything that was going on, because like, there was a moment where even Mia was like about to kill herself. And then you find out that it was, and then he stops her. Then you find out because of that, she has a miscarriage, and that is blown by. There's like a throwaway line for all of that. And she's just, and then she's like upset at it. And then like that leads into the rest of the movie, like right from that. And that's, that was such a thrown in thing to propel us through the end. And I didn't feel good at the end of this movie. I felt confused. I felt used. No, I just like, it threw me around like a blender, like those blue drink blenders. I felt like I was in one of the, which looked really tasty. I want one of those blue drinks, but I felt like I was getting blended around in there at the end here. It was nonsensical and too much at once when there was not enough leading up to it. I don't know. What do you think of that? Like, how did you react to all the stuff at the end there? Like, where you were like, oh, good, things are happening, action? Or like, for me, I was at first like that, but then I was like, it's not coalescing. It's not all is that the editing? I don't know. What do you feel about it?
I mean, I, at this point of the movie, there was such a, like, I was so disinterested in what was going on. Same. Because at the end, like, you could really see I know that the ending is odd and I obviously didn't see it coming, but like I also kind of saw it coming. And so there's just this malaise. And also too, the movie is really propagating the malaise that I felt with viewing this, because it's just so much of like his mother treats him like shit. Mia doesn't love him. Then his boss treats him like shit. Then his double treats him like shit.
He doesn't even get to show his new thing that he's working on.
Some report regression model. That's going to be great. I don't know. Yeah. The colonel. I'm sure the colonel. I don't know. Anyways. But so to the ending to your question was, I was honestly more just focusing on the, where the camera was, because that's honestly the most enjoyment that I got out of the movie, because he did put the camera in really crazy places. Like that one, like where the camera does the fall and then like goes onto the ground.
That was very Wes Anderson, that shot.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It felt like, I don't know.
Yeah. But nonetheless, there's also, like, you know, the whole scene of the grave for his mother, where there's a lot of like really interesting shots. There's one where like Mia runs out to like, cause Simon just tried to commit suicide. And then like the camera like ratchets way, way back. Mm-hmm. And then you get this really large POV of that, you know, scene going on. Mm-hmm. And that stuff was honestly, the most interesting part of this whole movie was some of that stuff. And
the hallway and with the lighting there, like with the different colors, some of the different colors were like, oh, I almost see like an interesting thing they're trying to do here. We're like, oh, it's a blue. Mm-hmm. It's a, they could have even done a little bit more with that. Oh, it's a red color now. Oh, interesting.
Oh,
I don't
colors.
Know.
Colors are fun.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about, what was it? You're going to die tomorrow. What is that? You're going to die tomorrow movie or whatever. That was a great use of colored lights. Like there was a whole like monster. I was like, whole the monster scene in that movie was colored lights.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
People would just like at it. And then it depended on their just, acting like, of just being like, oh my God, we're all going to fucking die. what a subtle way of explaining in a narrative. Idea. Yeah. And an idea.
Yeah. Right. Just communicating a thematic idea. Or yeah, just like communicating an idea through those elements of color and also in that movie that you referenced, like being so close on them and really just for a while, so you could really see so much internal stuff happening because you're just so close to their eyes. So yeah, like this movie had some of that. But the ending, it's just, again, there's so much suicide in this movie.
I know.
For it to be also trying to be a comedy, seems, I don't know, like,
I didn't expect the Mia one. That did that, like, to that just short credited that character, that moment, everything, like, and to go right back into his stuff. The climactic moment maybe would be when he's like, he stole my face! That's my face!
My face. With the arm, you're talking about that scene where
God, that was the third part I laughed at.
Yeah,
that was the third part. Oh my God, thank you.
The prosthetic.
That's
arm?
My last note. Oh, you can't give Rudolph his arm back. Inconceivable. I was like, where'd he get that arm? And then the line was so perfectly timed. I was like, yeah, give Rudolph his arm back. And that's like taking the shit out of the dramatic moment. They could have done a little bit more, I think, with that. Is like, if you're going to have these intense, dark things, like, yeah. And I think they were trying, but maybe it just didn't land. I'll go through some. Let me see if there's any other notes I wanted to look at.
I took almost no notes. The only one I really was like right at the beginning, then I just trailed off. But the first part of this movie reminded me so much of Paper Please, because he gets there and then there's that whole interaction with the guard to get him into his office, and then it's like, no, you need not only just this ID, but you also need this other piece of paper. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is so like Paper Please.
Reminded me of, and I'll try to be short with this, but the Andrew Callahan Channel 5 News, Channel 5, did a documentary on Las Vegas and the people who live in the tunnels in Las Vegas. And it was like an hour and a half long, got taken down for bullshit reasons. Try not to get into that, but I had the opportunity to watch it and it's amazing. One of the big struggles of people that live in the tunnels of Las Vegas is getting an ID. It sounds very difficult for them to get an ID when you don't have, like, you need an ID to get an ID sort of thing. And you need an address to get an ID, and that can be difficult. And that whole scene of him sitting down with the guy of like, okay, well, how do we fix this? How do I get back in the system? You say, how do I get, and you're like, no, it's like, you need an ID. Like, well, I don't have one. And that, it just, you know, it was maybe a stretch, but I'd watched it recently enough that it kind of reminded me of that. And that humor of the bureaucratic system that doesn't make sense. And you sit down to someone face to face who goes very much by the rules of everything. And there's no humanity left. It's all just these systems that we live and die by. And it's like, well, that's what it says. So he takes his computer and smiles and walks away. It's like, you know,
right.
But it also like, kind of scary.
Right. Like I'm standing here. Like I exist.
Yeah. You know, you know who I am. Like, I existed before in the system, so put me back in. And that's the thing, is that, yeah, and they'll arrest them for trespassing, know exactly who they are, put them in prison. They're in that system, but you can't put them in, you know, to get them.
Absolutely. Yeah, so.
All right. I'll try not to get too into that, but that I guess it's scary when a dystopia reminds you of reality, but that's why that's part of like sci-fi, right? I always like sci-fi writings and those kind of things. Cause that's where it's drawing from. It's like, oh, if you're going to go down this is like the most extreme version of this path that our society could go down or something. My first two notes are lighting is harsh and everything aggressively looks like a set. And that's like the very first thing I noticed. And it just carried through all the way through. Melanie is playing that duck hunt game with like the colonel. The way she's sitting on the couch and playing this duck hunt game was kind of funny. That was a weird character that did nothing for me as well.
Nothing.
And the whole thing about taking the key to his room. I don't know.
Because the only reason she was there is to be the foil that Hannah kills herself, essentially, because James sleeps with her and then Hannah finds out, which then triggers that.
Yeah. But, and it also is like leverage for the colonel and
all leverage. That. Yeah. Yep. It was the leverage too. Yeah. Yeah. Because James sleeps with her and then takes pictures of it. And then obviously just like uses that as leverage too, which again, how it's so crazy and so stupid and so like simple that all of that leverage was for him to use his apartment to fuck chicks in or something. Key that he like, who cares?
I know, man.
Like, this movie needed to move along. And it's like, let's just spend 40 minutes just with this whole like, yeah, James is an asshole. Like, and he's just hooking up with going so far as hooking up with the diner woman.
That was kind of funny.
You're like,
he brings her back.
But
then he just kind of gives it away willy-nilly. He's like, I'm gonna tell him, and then he's like, fine, I won't, you know, I forget what the like what he says he wouldn't do. He's like, and he says he's not gonna tell him, and then he just goes and tells him anyways, and it just seems so haphazard, that part. Too much time spent to these repetitive things when the last portion had a lot to get into and absorb and take in. I never seen an old lady with pigtails. That was interesting. Yeah, Peep and Tom. Torn up picture thing. I don't know.
And then her hands and bleeding because of it.
And then the journal at the end with all of them. I was like, this is supposed to be a big moment. And they're both crying. I'm like, I feel nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. I feel
absolutely nothing in this moment. That's not good, right? That's not good.
That's terrible. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, TV show looks awesome. Why didn't you notice? You're unnoticeable. Oh, yeah. They're both monotone. Are you a flamer is what he asks him. That was blew my, I was like, whoa.
Why is this
an attribute for him? They're recording lives is what they mentioned as their job at one point. So there's a little hint. There's the thing with her rubbing the cups together. Like, oh, they changed the cups. The other ones made it sound like crickets. And then the scene ended. I was like,
well, okay. Yeah. All right, moving on. All
right.
Some of my notes, mind you, I took very few of them, were really about quotes from stuff that was on TV in the movie, there's this whole monologue about that commercial about how people are our business and people do business and we are about business and people. And it just kept doing that whole shtick. And it's just a bunch of, generic shots of people doing business.
that whole that was okay. It's something where that's that term I feel like I've never heard it anywhere else, but I feel like I've mentioned other times where it's that contrived camp where it's trying to be this retro, and this is the whole retro futurism thing that this movie is trying to do. Maybe a little cyberpunky, but it's kind of the retro futuristic sort of thing, and a little bit of the Eastern European, I guess, with Dostoevsky and how the apartment blocks and where they work, but style. Yeah, I don't know if the style fully works. The date. I hated that, man. I hated that they did that. The fucking microphone trick with him in the bathroom and him going on a date. I'm like, are we really fucking doing this right now? Are we really fucking doing this? And the stupidest part is the only reason you would ever do that is because the two people wouldn't look the same. If you look the same, you don't need to do the microphone thing. You just have him go on the date.
Yeah.
And then switch later, right when you're about to do the deed or whatever. But you don't need to do the microphone thing. You guys look exactly the fucking same. Except when you don't need to, the narrative hinges on that. Depends on that sometimes in an annoying way, but that bugged me so much. It's like, you're really fucking shallow howling it right now? Oh, I cannot believe I'm watching Shallow Hal. And I like that movie.
But now knowing a little bit more about, Richard's approach to this or his sensibilities, in his mind, he probably looks at that is also a joke, the fact that that's happening and they're the same person.
Yeah,
right. That's also, isn't that so funny? Because to your point, typically it would be,
and I'm the idiot for criticizing it. Yeah,
James, you're not stopping, you're not an idiot. No,
that's how you it's very intentional, but I'm not getting it is what you might say to me. It's like, oh, you just don't get it. But even if I did, I don't think I'd like it.
It's just not a good joke. Yeah. It's not that you're an idiot. It's just not a fucking good joke.
Yeah.
Which this movie has a lot of not good jokes. And then on top of it, you're layering so much of the plot and so much of the other stuff is so fucking morose.
Mm-hmm.
So incredibly morose.
Yeah.
I can't express enough. The relationship he has with his mother is so upsetting.
There's no arc to that relationship either.
Upsetting.
He gets a knife out of that. That's how that loop ends, is he gets a knife from her friend.
Right. Friend. I don't know. Maybe a nurse or something. Yeah. Anyways.
The pigtail lady. She just had that. Yeah. No, I'm glad you're really stressing that, because there is not a light at the end of the tunnel with this movie.
No, because really, where does this movie leave us? Is him laying in the ambulance and what is, I
There's his one version in the apartment that you get the blood coming out of his head, and then you get the version on the ground. You know, it's the same person, whatever, but on the ground with the blood but then he opens his eyes and his arm comes up, I guess, and then she's there. I feel nothing. I feel nothing, Brandon. What do I do?
No, totally.
I feel nothing.
Because, I mean, and it's understandable because, you know, mainly because I also felt the same way watching this, is that I don't feel anything because it's almost like my nerves are shot, you know, like this movie is so all over the place and also very intense.
Mm-hmm.
And like right from the go, it doesn't really let off and it just numbs you a little bit where you're like, think about how many fucking suicides are in this goddamn movie.
Yeah.
Like, this is a movie that has like 4 suicides in it. Like,
they talk about it too.
And like, then they talk about it endlessly with everybody. And it's like, how can I? It's, to me, it's equivalent to in Star Wars, The Last Jedi, in the beginning of it, there's the scene where Poe is crank calling Domhnall Gleeson's character and just having this whole fun, you know, just comedic banter and whatnot. And then zip, people are dying in space. You're like, oh, Jesus. Like, I mean, at least that movie benefits from doing the funny stuff first before the intense stuff. So at least you're like a little bit more like, I don't know, like,
this one's all at the same time, baby. All at the same time.
This is all at the same time. And then also, front loading not humor and front loading a lot of grim realities and grim sci-fi, you know, satire of what the world could become, where it's all about just companies, you know, doing business. And then everybody that works there is this soulless person who just clickety clacks on a keyboard and does reports. And it's like, man, I know we're not there yet, but man, it's just crazy how unsuccessful this movie noticeably is. Mm-hmm. In like, you see what it's trying to do in so many ways along the road. You're like, I get what you're trying to do, but this isn't working.
It gets worse as the movie goes on. Unfortunately, like everything that I had issues with, like, got just worse and worse as it went on. I think that's pretty much all my notes. I don't know, there was this point where Mia was like saying something about, like, I forget why he was watching her this time, he always does, but she finds out, and then she says like it's reassuring to be watched, and I was like, did I catch that? It's reassuring to be watched. And immediately after, he like hold very casually, whatever, in a flirty sort of way or whatever, he puts his hand out to touch her arm right after she's saying, fine, watch me all you want, baby. And then he touches her a little bit and he's like, did you just fucking touch me? And I was like,
yeah,
what is happening? I can't track characters in this. I don't know who people are and what they want. And that's tough in a movie, especially in that was much later on in the movie. I don't know who these people are, what they want and their goals and their wants and needs and what the arc needs to be for them. And you can end on a darker note too, if you want, but fuck, it just, I think is hard to grasp onto the straws.
And I mean, and to that too, is like, in my mind, like if I could just try to like simply put it is that Hannah, Mia's character, she kills herself just because a guy she just met doesn't want to date her.
I guess, dude, that part was blown
like that's
over
go to so jail quick. Material, yeah. Movie wise. Like,
this is very close.
Fuck you, movie, for her whole entire life.
Yeah.
Is predicated on whether or not a guy she just met is into her, which she's never even had a relationship with. It isn't like they, you know, we get this whole thing of like they're having maybe an semblance of like a real relationship. It is so.
And then she was having his kid. Is that the deal?
Yeah, that's what we are supposed to think is that in the one hookup session that they did have, that she got pregnant. And that's where
this is things to do in Denver. When you're dead type of powerful semen.
Right. Yeah. Right. And just holy.
That's shit. Quite the reference. But, you know, if you know, you know.
Yeah, yeah. If you know,
Danny,
you know.
If you're listening,
go to bed.
Go to bed. Yeah. Very potent. But yeah, fuck. I don't know. This is tough because it is a movie. Yeah. I think I was very curious about, very interested in the comparison between this and Enemy. I'm happy that we didn't go in. I didn't want to bring up that movie too much, but fascinating. They both came out the same year. And now having not just that comparison, but this movie alone, it's like, oh, I like this movie. I should like this one. Wow. Did not enjoy myself. And that's spoiler alert for my review, I guess. But before we get to our reviews, we should get into some critics and audiences reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Before we do that, let's take a little break and we'll be right back.
Take a break. Yep.
Right. That had like a,
not only does the jukebox have that, that is the one, that is his go-to jukebox song.
Yeah.
Wild.
That was such a big moment because he goes to the bathroom on this date. I'm not sure. I think this is later when they kiss and everyone applauds. It's a weird moment. This is a weird movie. It's supposed to be weird, but it's trying to be weird. But God, what was I just saying? Fuck. Sorry. Yeah, she comes back from the bathroom and then it does that whole cutaway of her reading the note that she leaves. And it's such a like kooky sort of quirky sort of thing for someone to do in a movie that is also fun in that way, too. Like something like some Zooey Deschanel would do in 500 Days of Summer or something. It's cute.
Absolutely.
It's like a cute little moment. And it does that zoom in on her face, which is a fun camera move. And she's like, play, like she leaves him a quarter, like had to go play something happy on the jukebox. Fun.
I don't know.
She says like play something fun or something like that. And then you see the cool flipping of the coin. She throws it. And then it's like this unrecognizable coin, which is a little clue into the, this is a universe that we don't know. And it's like, oh, this is fun. But then, yeah. Okay. This is the song I'm going to pick. And I was like, oh,
I'm not mad
because the song is but cool. You're also kind of think that it's gonna be like a little bit more recognizable maybe, but this is the universe that we're in and the song is absolutely a big deal in this universe.
Because I mean, just fundamentally you're like, wait, is he just listening to like 70s Japanese R&B artist? It's
like that retro future into it. I don't know.
Yeah, and like that's his jam. It's just, I don't know. Is he gonna put on like city pop music?
Is he gonna go to a cocktail lounge and some swingers?
Right. Does he like chill lo-fi beats too? I don't know. Like, yeah, fucking
that was so, dude. You put a lo-fi beat on that song, I'd be into it.
Oh yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's check out some reviews from the poo-poos over on the critic side. They gave an 83% certified fresh movie. It's a spicy movie. And it's a 59% audience. It's not like completely poopy-doopy snoopy, but it's definitely subpar. Sub-certified fresh. Let's get into some thoughts and feelings from the critic's side of things. Let's take a look at Kate Muir. From the Times at UK, says, British director Ayo Ade's second film is jam-packed with witty references from cheesy sci-fi soap operas to the long-suffering men who populate the Coen brothers' films. John Semley from Globe and Mail, the film's bleakness is almost satirical. It's Brazil drained of the daydreams.
I mean, God, he's a little bit more tuned in than the one before.
We'll hear a few, I think, Brazil references from these critics, which is a movie I'm not super familiar with, but the little bit I've seen, I haven't finished it at the time I watched it, but I get the reference. You can see all the references that this guy is pulling from Tiber, Boston Globe. Oh. The double is a striking piece of work, but it's nostalgic for a kind of paranoia that may no longer exist. There are different things to frighten us now.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what are you implying, Tiber?
Yeah.
It's a little cryptic. From Evan Williams at The Australian says, at some point, the double begins to look like a critique of a regimented world of docile consumers enslaved by dehumanizing technology. But nothing feels heavy or pretentious.
I could not agree.
I'm going to have to say cap. On that one.
That is so cap. Holy
I'm going to have to throw a little cap in there.
Ugh. Okay.
Dana Stevens Slate. Iwadi creates a uniquely stylized dystopia lit in dusty tones of olive and okra and scored mysteriously, but somehow perfectly to vintage Japanese pop. That's a vintage Japanese pop.
The score is good.
There's another song for the credits. That's pretty good too. There's like this band that they use a couple songs from this. Yeah. Like 60s Japanese pop band.
Mm-hmm.
Iwadi from Kyle Smith, New York Post. Iwadi's breathtakingly realized oddity will appeal to fans of David Lynch and the comic surrealism of Terry Gilliam's Brazil. There we go again. And then we'll do one more from Bob Mondello from NPR. 8.5 out of 10. Sorry, I haven't been giving all these scores. Some of them they don't say, but they just did a little fresh tomato there. Bob Mondello says, this workplace as hellscape is not new territory exactly. The story is based on Dostoevsky, plays like Kafka, and looks like an Orwellian nightmare. But who'd complain, since it lets Jesse Eisenberg offer what amounts to an acting masterclass? It's a masterclass, wow. Brandini. Get over it.
I mean, yeah, I can understand those references that they were making for sure.
Yeah. These critics, that's where they, whether they like it or not, they know the references and they appreciate them for that. And it's interesting how it can kind of go either way in that department. Cause for me, that did not work as well. And speaking of not working well, let's hear what the audiences have to say for the 59% range of thinking. What's that?
You were like, speaking of not working well, let's talk about the people that loved it.
Oh no, the audiences hate it.
Oh, that's right. I'm so fucked.
You fucked up my transition, Brandini.
Rob, the Emperor's groove right there. My bad.
Emperor James Dini. From Vibhav Agarwal, 1 star. They say, don't watch it. If you want your brain to be in one piece, just don't freaking watch it. It's a very, very depressive and just nonsense, utter nonsensical movie.
Yeah.
From Sunil Singh, 1 star. I think the screenwriter stole it from Dostoevsky's novel by the same name. They should have at least not taken the whole credit for it.
Oh,
they took all the credit.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Got to give it up for Dostoevsky. You know, yeah, gotta be like, hey, you know. Let's not forget.
Yeah, let's.
Let's go to Carlos Restrepo, 1 star. Definitely movies in which the good guy dies are deplorable and viewers hate them. Don't waste your time. Francisco Ibanez, 3rd. 1 star. They say, nonsense and boring movie. 1 hour and 30 minutes of my life wasted.
Thank God this movie was that long, man.
Yes, that's one thing I appreciate.
30 minutes longer?
Ooh. Scary. From Ninja, 1 star. This movie is incredibly boring. From first second to last second, you won't see anything interesting.
Yeah.
From Jamie K, 1 star. Geez, this was a trial to sit through. I considered leaving the cinema several times, but held out till the end. Richard Ayoade's brand of oh-so-cool kooky shtick just does nothing for me. And I found this to be interminably boring and ultimately pointless. British Wes Anderson? give me a fucking break.
Oh, put him in a body bag, dude.
From Markella Onesar, why Richard Ayoade? Why? I was going to guess this was a French film, but English was my second guess. Sandwiched next to movies like City of Lost Children and something that was meant to come out between 99 and 2001. Boring. Meant to be a dark comedy, I believe. One of those desolate European future films where it's always night, possibly because the sky is filled with soot. I'm sure the double is for someone, but not me.
That review was great because it's like, first off, it just makes me think that the person in every movie is like, what country is this from? Like that's always a blank slate every time you watch a movie, even though maybe you clearly know it's from a certain country.
There's a few different accents getting flown around here. Yeah.
But then also too, that ending is so funny where it's like, yeah, still they don't know where it's from because they call it like European. They admit that it's, yeah, anyway.
It's like, yeah, it's probably one of those European future films.
Right, but you admit it in the first half that it's not European.
I was going to guess it was French, but English was my second, yeah. We'll do one more from Danny Boyo. Boyo-yo, one star. The ultimate cuck move is to be cucked by yourself. All right, that's right. Audience reviews. Let's wrap it up. Boo.
I love ending on a cock comment. Wow.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
You know, you just give your keys away to yourself to so you don't to have it be a bang room that you don't have access to.
Whoa, a bang room. Holy shit.
Yeah, man.
Smell.
You want my key? Let's wrap up the ideas for polarization. I got just like any feelings on that.
Yeah.
Why the critics liked it as much as they did, I think, is a surprise to me. I don't think this movie, obviously, through our opinion and what you've heard today, don't think it does for me what it does for these critics. I get the polls and the references to better films and better directors. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to be mean, but for me it just didn't work in the same way. And I for the audience like sampling there, I get the boring thing. Like I had a hard time getting through this for an hour and a half long movie.
Damn.
Especially I watched Enemy like before it, and I'm sorry to do that, but like
okay,
that movie barely has any dialogue. It's very visual and slow, but it's not fucking boring. And that it is a slow movie and not a lot happens, but it is not fucking boring. And I am like enthralled and like, I kind of have to stop and just like fully soak it in. And that did not bode well for the double for me. But to give it, yeah, an 83% from the critics.
Confounding. Yeah.
Is too high.
Yeah, this is one of those movies where, yeah, both of us are on the same page of like, wow, that's so crazy that the critics don't recognize what we've discussed as being very like apparent like issues and very fundamental problems of the movie and overlooking that. And really I would just say the reason that this is polarizing is because critics must, you know, recognize Richard as an potential up and coming director that at times in this movie do interesting things with the camera. And then also the themes of doing a Dostoevsky in this day and age, but adding more comedy to it and him being a comedy guy being something that they want to herald and being, you know, more on board with. Again, it's just so weird because I feel like this always happens. Is like, I think that they're more into the idea and the context and of this movie than the movie itself. Because it just doesn't make sense how critics are able to not recognize so many blatant issues with pacing, characters, plotting, just, you know, the basics.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because I feel like I like movies that don't necessarily adhere themselves to a plot or a narrative, and more of a vibe, if you will. And
sure. Mm-hmm.
This was such a weird, uneven sort of type of pastry or something where you like, it's burnt on the outside and raw in the middle. I don't know how to put it. So it's very uneven, everything about it. And I'm glad that we were able to try to coalesce our thoughts. And I think we had to talk more big picture about what it's trying to do stylistically, because that's such a big part of why it wants to exist. This movie is for the style, because the story obviously has been done before and is done again in the same year. So the conversation went better than I expected, because after that movie, I was like, I don't even know if I can tell you what happened in it. But this helped kind of bouncing off with you about our ideas of it and our feelings. And I'm glad it seems like we're in the general ballpark, and to get an idea of really where we land in that ballpark. What do you think you'd rank this bad boy, Brandini? And any other final thoughts you want to give it?
Yeah. God, this is an interesting one, because what's interesting about this, well, also too, I just want to say that I'm still reeling from our Roadhouse episode.
Ooh, because classic app,
but I've just been reeling from that, because at the end of it, when we were giving our reviews, you know, our guest Evan was like, really saying to us, like, you're not being critical about this. Uh-huh. You're almost operating on vibes with this movie. Because to his credit, like, it's not like he didn't like the movie at all. Like, we had such a great discussion. There was things that he loved about it. But at
It was like a 50 for a movie, but I think he gave it like 70 or something for vibes.
He did. Yeah. But, you know, so I'm still reeling from that. And I think about, and I've thought about it multiple times outside of that episode leading up to this, because like, he's not wrong. Like, when it came to that movie, so much of it is like, this movie just makes me feel good. I get that there's problems with it, and if you are to be critical of it, he was amazing at giving like his summation and saying why it's a 50. And it's almost like he's approaching scoring like, I was just thinking about this too, in, you know, or in relation to what I'm talking about with his scoring method, with a video I saw on TikTok rating movies. And there's a tendency just in our generation and online where everybody just gives things like eights through tens. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's ever like coming to this being very like, how do I say this? Like, coming at it from a perspective that if you just give everything tens, then what, like, you know, then everything
can't work out from that.
Yeah. You can't work out from that.
He was like, yeah. So you're saying if it did like 15% more, it's like the best movie ever.
It's Citizen Kane. He made that point too. Yeah.
But then I don't deny that. Like, I don't deny that it was an 85% experience for me. And that's where it comes to down to like experience over objective content maybe. But that's exactly where you have every right to score it how you want. And my whole thing was, that's kind of how you and Danny felt about the Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead episode. And I was more on the Evan side of things, where I was like, I get why you guys enjoy this. And I even enjoyed myself watching it with you. But I understood. Yeah. It was like, it's not, the content is bad for me, and it doesn't go over that hill of being maybe so bad it's good. Roadhouse is a weird one, because I don't know. You can't even crack that, you know, can of worms open again, but that has it all for me in a lot of ways as a movie going experience. Sorry Absolutely. To cut your review off.
No. You're adding. Yeah. I kind of want this to be a dialogue, because again, I've just been thinking so much about, you know, what he said, because we're giving scores to these movies, and it is interesting that how much emotion or feeling can play a part of that as opposed to other movies where we're very critical of. So that's why I bring this up in relation to this movie.
There's examples. It's like Spy Kids, you know, for me.
Yep, there's a bunch of them, man. I mean, also too, like, one of our first episodes with Lion King, right? Yep. Like,
that wasn't like a history thing. That was more just like a taste, but yeah, it just comes out taste.
But
like,
you that's enjoyed what art is, the vibe of it a yes. lot.
I think it was still like a 60 or something. I think I sold it like 60 or 70 fresh, but I understood the problems and I was like,
sure.
I sat with my cat. We snuggled and he watched it intently. And I was like, this is mm-hmm. a good experience for me. And I also like enjoyed it in the movie theater. I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, you're good. And it's, the way that I've thought about, you know, why, you know, giving Roadhouse, for example, such a high score is there's also this thing at work too, where this movie is a really great example of it is that the critics giving this such a high score, it's, I don't know, it comes off as being very pretentious, and you're looking at movies in this sacred way that at times you're incapable of just letting it kind of wash over you and just letting the vibe of it and the enjoyment of just a movie being a movie, you know, exist. And you have to be so critical about it. And yeah, this movie elicits that, where there, I can understand to a small degree why critics gave this such a high score. But when you talk about, or not when you talk about when watching this movie and how I felt about this movie, I did not feel good about watching this movie. I felt pretty shitty watching this movie. And yeah, it's such a good example of critics being by and large unable to shift over into that a little bit more of the audience mode of, instead of being so like, oh, look how look how different or look how artistic all of these things are, mm-hmm. instead taking a step back and going like, was that an enjoyable movie? And this is not an enjoyable movie. I would not recommend this to people at all. Like, it's just so, there's so little this is so terrible, I feel bad, but
nah, man.
This is, there's so little redeeming about this movie that I just, yeah, again, it blows me away that critics give this such a high score and aren't able to take their heads out of their own butts and go like, regardless of the camera work, regardless of the source material, mm-hmm. regardless of the burgeoning actor, director, whatever, like, mm-hmm. is this an enjoyable movie? And it's not. And so, yeah, I'm, because certain things landed with me just style wise and a little bit of the comedy, very little.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this movie like a 23% is how I'm feeling about it.
For everything we've said and you finished with right there, that sounds completely fair. And you've given every reason to give it that low of a score. And what's frustrating for me in these kind of movies where I don't enjoy is, it ends up being almost lower for me because I'm so frustrated at like the potential a little bit. And I resonate with the critics where it's like, hey, I am excited about this source material. It sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm not the biggest fan of like doubling up an actor and having them interact with each other. Not excited about that. And even going into this movie, I'm like, I hope there's not too much of that. There was a little too much. And that's where Enemy was a little better, where it's like, I don't need to see him in the same place too much, but just the idea of them being in the same existence is interesting enough. Sure. This one, I was confounded almost immediately with the choices and the stylistic direction. The lighting threw me off instantaneously. Like, I think that is my first note. And then the set thing was like first thing I took in, and like, if we are talking about feelings and vibes and everything, like that's that sort of stuff of just sensory parts of sound, video, you know, parts of watching anything. And those were already affecting me in negative ways. So that was a something I had to crack through a bit. So I'm weeding through that, trying to find the good stuff, hacking through, you know, the bullshit. But I find some good stuff. I find, you know, like the audio editing and throwing in those sounds during the drain, seeing the close up of the drain with like the combination of the sound I forget exactly what that was. It was almost like just a mechanical thing. And then like the wind blowing, I think during a moment between him and Mia, you know, is something where I'm almost hanging on for dear life in this movie. Cause I'm just trying to find something, to enjoy and to hang my hat on. And that would be also, yeah, like Jesse Eisenberg. I'm not like going to go see a movie cause Jesse Eisenberg isn't it. He's not that kind of actor for me. I don't hate him, but I'm never going to be like, oh, it's a new Jesse Eisenberg picture. But he is, when he's utilized well, I see how good he can be. And of course that Social Network, and he's watching that again recently, is like an amazing performance. And in this one is like half of an amazing performance, you know? And I don't put it all on him completely, cause he tried something and it seems like him and the director got along well, but that other side of him did not work for me like at all, really. And having them in the scene together, two of them, which is the point where you should be like, oh, now we're cooking in the movie. I'm like, hey, like, I'm like, hit, get me out of here. Hit the brakes or get them out of the same scene. I can't handle this. Too much Eisenberg. And then we reach the end of the movie and I'm about to just like give up, because I'm pausing and rewinding because I'm doing this podcast and I'm trying to take in the material and this is the movie that I think it wants me to do that. It wants me to be like, ooh, what's going on here? Ooh, what's going on there? And I do that and it's not satisfying. And I write these notes and they trail off at the end. Cause at the end I give up on the movie. I give up on everything it's giving me in it and the way that it resolves it. I don't find myself caring by the time it gets there. But there's some stylistic things that work like the brief sort of moments in between other things going on. There's like, oh, that one was kind of cool. Or, oh, that one was kind of interesting. But overall, yeah, that lighting. And this just felt like a stage play. So I will give it a 33, I guess is like, yeah, that's like,
yeah,
ballpark, but I wanted to do some sort of double up on the numbers. There's like a double.
Oh, fun.
There's a double three. It's a double three. That was our double episode. If they come out with the sequel, really hope it's the double double.
Or the trouble.
Ooh, double trouble.
that's a joke Richard made.
Oh.
He's like, yeah, they made another one, it'd be called Trouble.
Okay. All right. Well, he's a funny guy. Of course he would come up with that. He's like, I've been cooking on this.
Yeah.
I watched Somebody Feed Phil last night, the Iceland episode, before we wrap up this episode. Sorry. But there was this joke that someone said, where he's like, so why did you move to Iceland? And she was like, for the weather. And I was like, I would make that joke every single fucking time anybody asked me when I lived in Iceland of like, why did you move here? Like, oh, for the weather. That's a good one. You just got to do that every time.
You got to do it every time.
thank you so much, everyone, for joining us here on this The Double episode. Despite our feelings of the movie, I always say that I thoroughly enjoy our conversations, and it is for these ones that we don't like so much, very cathartic for me to get things off my chest. Thanks for anyone out there listening, and thanks Brandini for going on this journey with me.
James Deeney,
it's been a true pleasure. And for our next venture into polarizing movie town, kingdom, if you will, we are going into 2006 for a romance comedy. It is called John Tucker Must Die. PG-13.
Okay.
PG-13. So, you know, if he does die, it's not going to be too gruesome. Don't worry about it. I have not seen this movie. I remember when it came out as a young man in 2006, but I did not see it. It is a critically panned.
Neither did I.
Yeah. I remember.
It's like, that movie's not for me, weirdly, at that time, I felt.
I don't think it was. Yeah, I was like, I feel like I was seeing a lot of movies at that time, too. But I'm very curious how it holds up.
Yeah, right.
Critics did not like it at the time. It was a 28% for them. It is a 69. And for the audience, we're gonna check it out next time on this very fine program of Polarized Pod. We have some very special guests, returning guests. It'll be surprised when you get there. Let's read the synopsis here for this here movie.
Yeah,
after discovering they are all dating the same guy. Oh, it says the same guy.
Uh-oh, typo in that.
I need to edit this in Rotten Tomatoes. After discovering they're all dating the same guy, three popular students from different cliques band together for revenge, so they enlist the help of a new gal in town and conspire to break the jerk's heart while destroying his reputation. John Tucker Must Die. Starring Jesse Metcalf, Sophia Bush, Ashanti, Jenny McCarthy, Brittany Snow. Fucking Ashanti's in this movie. That's nuts.
Brittany Snow.
Taylor Kitsch is in here. Movies. Written by Jeff Lowell. Directed by Betty Thomas. All right. Penn Badgley. Is that the you guy? Almost looks like him. No, it's not. All right. I'm going to shut up now. Overstated our welcome. Thank you for welcoming us into your ear holes once again. It's been a true pleasure. I have been James. This has been Brandini. If you'd like to see us live, twitch.tv/polarizedpod. Send us a line at gmail.com/polarizedthepod. You can reach us those ways. You can rate, review, subscribe.
Yes.
On Apple Podcasts. Yes. That would be awesome. More of that is big for a little tiny podcast like us. Every single one counts if you take a little moment. If you're on Apple Podcasts to do that, we'd really appreciate it. We love you all, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.